Hi, I'm Leah Huber, the author of Nourished, a memoir of food, faith, and enduring love with recipes, which I highly recommend you get for the holidays for yourself and for others as gifts. And please do sign up for my weekly email at nourishevolution.com, where I will send you recipes and inspiration each week and also give you some helpful tips and tools to get through the holidays.
You're listening to iWine Radio.
First in Wine Talk.
My name is Lynn Crelo Chamberlain, host. Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain.
Welcome to Wine and Dine. Joining us today on iWine Radio is Leah Huber. And Leah is the book of a very powerful memoir that was recently released, titled Nourished, a memoir of food, faith, and enduring love. This is a book that is not just for recipes, but it's a story. It's a story of her search for what's important in life and for connection. And I would like to start our chat here, sharing with listeners and bringing something to light here that I totally agree with. And I'm quoting, "Food is so much more than just something we put in our mouths or use to fuel our bodies. It's a blend of memories, emotions, feelings, and needs." And I so agree with you. I so agree with you.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, as I was thinking about our talk today, I was thinking wine really fits that too.
Yes.
You know? And especially when we talk about terroir, it's almost like up-leveled, that whole experience of that wine can embody so much more than just the sip that we take, you know, and the physical sensations of the wine that we're experiencing, because there are memories and there's this sense of place. And, you know, there was this one time, I remember my husband and I were on the crazy road trip that I write about in Nourished. That's one of the pieces that I write about in Nourished. And we were in Costa Rica. We were living in Costa Rica, and we'd been gone for, at that point, probably 3 or 4 months. And so, you know, feeling a little homesick, maybe more like 5 months, actually. So feeling a little homesick. And my parents flew down to be with us, and they brought a bottle of Simi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know.
Iconic.
Yeah, it is. And it's right up the road from where we live now. But, and we'd been living, and we really enjoyed, in our time in Latin America, we really enjoyed exploring other wines of South America primarily, because we couldn't find Californian wines. It was just, we hadn't had a wine from home, a Californian wine, in 5 months, and had just been drinking South American wines. And hadn't thought much about it. We thought, you know, it was enjoyable. But when my parents showed up with that bottle of Simi, and we opened it up, and I poured a glass, and I, you know, nosed it, and I started to cry, because I was smelling the scents of home. You know, it was the dust and the fruit and the eucalyptus and I felt like I was home. And that was so powerful to me of how evocative a glass of wine can be, beyond just the pleasure of the wine, but into that sort of deeper well of, you know, memories and experience and sort of that soul imprint.
So I want to ask you about Corfu, and I want to ask you about Umbria. But I'd like to start by finding out, what prompted you to take this walkabout?
The walkabout to Latin America, to
Costa
Rica?
Just this whole journey. What started it all?
Yeah. I mean, I have to admit to being prone to wanderlust to begin with.
Okay,
so
any
excuse that I can find to go wander off, I will do so. But the one to Latin America was really driven by, I had faced two life-threatening illnesses back-to-back within 2 years, and came out of that and entered my 30s and was just like, what's going on? You know, and that was really what started my quest to answer the question, what should I be eating that's going to nourish me and keep me alive and healthy and thriving? Because I thought I knew that answer. I was actually already a food writer when this happened, and so I thought I knew that answer. And so it sent me into both wanting to research that answer, you know, and talking to experts around the world and getting that answer, but also it led me to want to reset, you know, and to my husband and I both just really had this deep desire to pull up stakes and to kind of get back to the root of things, you know, and get back to really, like you said in your introduction, really get back to what mattered, you know, rediscover what mattered in our lives and refocus on that. Because life had just been really busy and we'd kind of been on autopilot. And then when you're faced with these really scary, harrowing things, it just flips the perspective. And I realized I didn't have any perspective. And so that's what really made us pull up stakes and drive down to Costa Rica and live down there for a while.
You drove down.
We drove down.
Oh, wow. Oh, how cool. That unto itself and crossing all the border crossing experiences must have been fascinating.
Oh my gosh, it was very, very, very fascinating. I mean, it's definitely, I'm a big believer that that travel isn't just about the physical journey, but so much so about the internal journey as well. You know, and we learn so much about ourselves through travel. So it was 8,000 miles from, you know, San Francisco to Costa Rica and back. But it wasn't just the sights that we were seeing and learning from outside. It was also all of these things that we were learning about ourselves.
You and your husband together in a car for 8,000 miles. How did that work?
It was very interesting. And the interesting thing was, even before then, our careers were such that my husband was actually traveling during 3 to 4 days out of every week. And so that was really the first time in our marriage that we had been together consistently. So it was sort of a double whammy of of a challenge, exactly. But thankfully, we discovered that we really, really enjoyed being together. So that was a good discovery.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I am addicted to the Daryls in Corfu, the PBS series. So what the heck is it about Corfu that is so magnetic?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. And I wish I could answer it objectively, but it's so subjective for me because it is such a place that holds such a special place in my heart. For me, I will say that I was in Corfu early on. I was there when I was 20. So I was young when I was there, and it just made a huge impression on me in the way that it was so real, I guess is a good word to use for it. That, you know, the chicken that you would eat would be the next door neighbor's. The eggs you would eat would come from the chicken, the hens from next door. The olive oil that you'd cook with was kept in an ouzo bottle that was, you know, it was pressed from the olive groves down the street. Everything was just so pure and fresh and real. And coming from the Midwest in America during the low-fat craze and really being raised by a family that very much embraced convenience foods,
yeah,
it was a revelation to me. And it took me years to look back and sort of unravel those revelations and how deeply they had impacted me. It was really a seed that was planted in my life that took quite some time to come to maturity and to, you know, blossom and bloom into something that I actually understood and could integrate into my own life. But it's a magical, magical place. I mean, there's just these ancient olive groves everywhere and these, you know, beautiful mountain ranges that drop down into the sea and the, you know, crystal gorgeous blue Ionian Sea. It's really a wonderful place.
I have been to the area in Spain where cava is produced and Prioreto. And I remember one vineyard in particular where there was wild lavender and wild thyme and all that sort of stuff growing throughout the vineyard. And so that was part of the terroir of the wine also. And I kind of have this image in my mind that that would be what Corfu was like. When you were growing up, did your mother ever fry eggs? Because you had an epiphany with fried egg and Corfu. And was it because it was fried in olive oil and the egg was just hatched that morning?
Yeah, it really was. I think it was one of those things where the eggs that I'd grown up with were supermarket eggs.
Yeah.
And I don't even, we didn't really do fried eggs. We'd do poached eggs or scrambled eggs.
Yes, yes, yeah.
You know, and so they were eggs and they were utilitarian. I mean, I didn't hate them. They were utilitarian, but I didn't think of them as something luscious and amazing. They were just eggs. You know what I mean? And this egg was a meal. I mean, it was so unbelievably amazing, this one on Corfu. And it just, it was sort of, it didn't resemble any of the eggs that I had eaten before. The, you know, the yolk was something I would always sort of bypass. You know, I never really liked the yolk. It was kind of runny. It sort of was flavorless. It was like, this one was so thick, it was like cake batter. And it was so yellowish orangey,
yes,
like yellowish orangey red. And it had so much flavor to it that I thought they'd added something to it. I couldn't understand how that fried egg was just a fried egg. You know, and then the other piece was the olive oil also, that the oil itself had so much flavor. And that was something else that, to me, olive oil was just something you tried to use as little of as possible.
Yes,
because
yeah,
it was something that would make you fat, right?
Yeah, right.
And so to have this egg that was like this luscious, unbelievably sort of decadent food in front of me was just mind-blowing. You know, and it's two ingredients.
I totally understand.
Yeah,
I totally
yeah
understand where you're coming from.
Before
you traveled, did you and or your husband study Spanish or Italian, or did you just kind of wing it?
Well, I studied French all through my childhood. And so I was fluent in French when I went to live in France my junior year in college, and which was great, but it didn't help me much in Italy and in Mexico. But it did. I took Italian when I lived in France and studied in France. So that was helpful. I had a little Italian under my belt.
Okay.
And it does help me in other, you know, Latin language
yes
countries.
Yes.
But what can also happen is sometimes I'll open my mouth and this cascade of Franglespagnol will come out. And
that's
it's just,
what I
it's
do,
a mess
too. That's exactly what I do.
Yes.
I can think in French.
Yes. Yep. Totally.
Totally.
And it's helpful. It's definitely helpful in understanding things and in kind of getting your point across, but it can also be really confusing and difficult to, you know, to get the words right. But, and my husband's better at Spanish than I am, but we're pretty good with languages.
You know, of all the still white wines in the world, I am not ashamed to say that one of my absolute favorite wines that I could drink every day is the simplistic Orvieto.
I knew you were going to say the Orvieto. Yes.
Oh
yes,
my gosh.
Yes.
I have been in have a love affair with Orvieto for many years.
Yes.
And and I have a severe problem with motion sickness. So driving through Umbria to see, you know, where truffles or something is kind of a nauseous experience for me. But it is so worth the patience and the drive. So what drew you to Umbria?
Yes. Well, Christopher and I, when we settled in California, or when we settled in Northern California, when we came back from our quest down to Costa Rica and we settled up in north of San Francisco in wine country, we decided that we were going to try and open a pasta shop, an artisanal pasta shop.
Oh, wow.
And so, of course, and I told you before, I have wanderlust, so any excuse to travel I'll take. Mm-hmm. So we were like, well, of course, we have to go to Italy and learn how to make pasta. So we hired this woman who was a tour. She did tours. She was a cookbook author. She was kind of a real culinary person. And she put together a personalized tour for us over the course of 2 weeks to go and meet with different people in northern Italy who would teach us how to make pasta.
Okay.
And she actually wasn't even with us. She just went ahead and met with everybody and set the itinerary, and then we went on our own.
Okay.
And it was amazing. And Orvieto was one of the places that she sent us. And we fell in love with Orvieto and then ended up going back, you know, several times on our own back to Orvieto because we loved it so much. Yeah, it's such an incredible town set up on this tufa rock and with the cathedral on one end and these medieval streets. And at night when everybody does the passeggiata and walks around town and there's parents pushing their kids in strollers and everything. And it's all, they're people carrying like by torchlight. And it's just, it's magical. It's just an incredibly magical place. And then, as you know, all those, the rolling hills of Umbria are just so beautiful, you know. And I find it, one of the things I love about that area of Italy is just how, you know, again, it's not very built up.
Yes,
it's not very touristy,
yes.
You know.
That's what's so magical.
Real.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just very real, again, and very down to earth, and incredible food, incredible wine, but not fine food and fine wine, which is kind of, I've found on my travels, that's really what I prefer. I prefer the simple homespun meals that are ones that you find in people's homes, you know, and the wines that are the Pichet du Vin Rouge, you know, or the carafe of the Orvieto Classico, or, you know, whatever it may be, that those are the wines that are kind of the fabric of people's lives. You know what I mean?
Yep, totally.
Yeah.
So here we are going into the holiday season.
Yes.
And I cannot recommend highly enough that people purchase a copy of Nourished, a memoir of food, faith, and enduring love with recipes by Leah Huber. So I have problems with this, but I understand for a lot of people, for a tip that it works in, you know, lessening the frenzy, overindulgence, and just people kind of freaking out about, it's a lot of stress and responsibility, is when people walk in the door that you put them to work in the kitchen or wherever.
Yes. Yep. I'm a big fan of that. And I think it kind of, it's funny because it kind of integrates well with what I've been saying about how I really prefer the simple and the down home and things like that. It's, yeah, there are times for celebrations where it's more like a show, you know?
Yes, yeah.
But I think that for the most part, people really want to be included. And I find that people are either going to stand there in my kitchen and ask me 50,000 times how they can help, and it's going to drive me nuts, you know, or even if I give them something to do, then they're going to be like, well, where's that peeler? Well, where's the knife? Well, where's the cutting board? Well, where's the, you know?
Yeah.
Or I can chunk down everything that I need to do and then be like, oh, so I can have this person do this, and I can have this person do this, and I can have this person do this, and then sort of set up and arrange stations with all of the tools that they're going to need to do it. And then we're all there in the kitchen together, and everybody feels like they have a purpose. And then when dinner is served, it has even more meaning and more richness because it's been an experience that we've all shared.
That's such a good point.
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a good point. Now, but now, do you have a big kitchen? I mean, can you accommodate a lot of people? So how do you do that? Because I go crazy.
People end up in the kitchen anyways, though, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
you notice that people end up
in the kitchen anyway.
Yeah.
So they're either sort of underfoot and frustrating. I almost said annoying, but that would be bad. But they're either, you know, underfoot and it makes you frustrated.
Yeah.
Or they're stationary, you know, in front of something being productive and feeling like a part of it. I mean, I remember I grew up and my grandmother would always be puttering around the kitchen saying, how can I help? How can I help? How can I help? And it would drive my mom absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And after the dinner, my mom would complain that, you know, grandma was underfoot the whole time and wasn't, you know, just wouldn't sit down and just enjoy herself.
Yeah.
And my grandma would complain to me that my mom wouldn't let her do anything.
Right.
And it's like, is that really achieving anything positive?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
So that's why I really think, I've just found that when we're all cooking together in the kitchen, there's no better vibe than when everybody is involved in the kitchen together.
And can that include asking people to help set the table or decorate the tree?
Totally. And it also can include children. You know, there are things that kids can do that are fantastic. There's zipping kale. If you hold a kale leaf with your left hand, in the left hand, and zip the leaves off with your right, kids are fantastic at that. Getting seeds out of pomegranates.
Oh,
you fill up a bowl
yes.
of cold water. Oh, kids love that. It's like a treasure hunt, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's like they're hunting for gems. And even sometimes, even for the little ones, I'll give them like sprigs of rosemary or thyme and ask them to pull the sprigs off, even if I don't really need it. Because it just gives them something to do.
Oh, that's a good
and then
idea.
They feel really proud of what they've done.
Yeah.
And then when the, you know, dinner is served, they think, oh, that's the dinner I made. What a special way to go to dinner.
Yeah. So in order to make that happen, if it's not part of your natural way of thinking and doing things, people mm-hmm. have to, who are hosting others mm-hmm. to come over, they really need to, in order to keep their sanity, they need to create some kind of a game plan ahead of time, you know, and a sign.
For sure.
So they
yes.
could post it on the door when they walk in. This is your job. This is your
yep.
job. So people can start
yep.
processing in their brain, if it's a yep. new activity, what all is going to take place.
Yeah, exactly. I find that to be really, really helpful. I do. I write everything out very specifically and then post it. And then people can, and what's great about that too, is like if they finish one task, then rather than come and have to ask you and you be like, what is it?
Yeah.
They just go and look and then there's their next task.
Oh,
and it really,
wow.
it's really, really, really helpful. Yeah. And you just post it. You can make it. It's a very welcoming. It makes it almost like a game.
It's a production. It's a play.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I like that. I like that.
Good. I highly recommend trying it this holiday season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leah Huber, I've had such a great time talking to you. I thank you so very much.
Thank you. I've so enjoyed it. I've so enjoyed it, Lynn. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Zelma Long with Villafonte Vineyards from South Africa. Do listen to Lynn on Wine and Done.
iWine Radio is a production of Food Tastes Better with Wine on the web at iWineRadio.com.
You're listening to iWine Radio.
First in Wine Talk.
My name is Lynn Creelo-Chamberlain, host.